If you Google, it's like list of fictional turtles, and it's like in video games, in film and television, in comics, in politics, post turtle. I don't know what that is. And then Mitch McConnell. That's so good. It's just still in the fucking Wikipedia article. That's incredible.
is post turtle.
What is post turtle?
This is where I've ended up. I'm on ranker.com at the list of greatest turtle characters of all time. If you had to guess who number one is, the greatest turtle character of all time,
Which one? Sorry?
the
Let me guess.
greatest turtle character of all time, if you had to guess.
Leonardo?
Me find out where Leonardo is. I'll tell you, he's the lowest of the Ninja
Wow.
Turtles. He comes in at nine on the greatest turtles of all time.
Oh, I thought he'd be the most popular. Is Michelangelo the most popular?
Michelangelo comes in at number eight.
Wow. What the fuck? Who likes Raphael?
Raphael's number seven.
Raphael's a baby.
Yeah. But
Wow.
Donatello is number one.
Some nerds made this list.
In between there is the turtle from Kung Fu Panda, two turtles from Finding Nemo, Squirtle, which I'll give you that, and Bowser.
Yeah, I was looking at Bowser in that list and being, that must be like a Bowser joke.
Not exactly a turtle.
Donatello?
Yeah, Donatello. People like that bow staff. I know I did.
In the game. Like, Donatello's a fucking nerd.
Hey, I'm a nerd.
I guess, but like, don't you aspire to be not a nerd? Didn't you aspire to be not a nerd?
Could you win the game? If I was drawing seven, make Grizzle brand again. Now I'm just drawing seven. You think you're strong, but ley line's gone, and step into it won't be long till I'm drawing seven. Fill my whole hand, 'cause I'm just drawing seven.
Sora's target crystal brand.
Response, I'm drawing seven. I'll still reanimate if you're bored in hate. You always draw it one turn too late, so I'm drawing seven.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the legacy podcast that's Googling list of fictional turtles on Wikipedia and still coming up with jack shit for this intro. My name's Quinn Omori, and I'm here as always with my co-host Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how's it
Hey,
going?
Quinn. Good. Well, very good. Happy to be post turtle.
We're starting with a bang. McBain is going to love this when he gets back.
Deep diving on some turtle Wikipedia pages.
On that note, Brendan McBain, usually here, not here, as the number one legacy slash geography podcast. I believe he's on the large island, which is Oahu.
Colloquially known as the Big Island.
Big Island. Sorry,
This
not
is
the large
some
island.
what was that, like, semantic wordle? I feel like we're getting there to figure out what island he's at.
He's on the large adult island.
871 out of 1,000 in closeness.
Also, no one knows that. That's not a popular Wordle variant, is it?
You showed it to me yesterday, and I did, I think, about 70 guesses and never got closer than that, and was like, I'm sick of this.
It's really hard.
It's very hard.
it's also not necessarily, I mean, well, maybe I'm wrong of saying they don't like chain together necessarily because it's based off AI. So if you use a word that's related to the word in meaning or even like feeling, like for the majority of people, but the word's quite uncommon, it won't come up because the AI hasn't really like developed that.
This thing's a fucker. And to make this a Wordle podcast, man, I put in, so it's like there's a word and every word you put in, it tells you like roughly how close you are and like what it means, not like how it's spelled or anything. And I put in like fast and it's like, you know, kind of close. And I put in like faster and it's like, it's faster. And then I put in like speedy and that was as close as I ever got. And I just put in like everything I can possibly think of that means like faster of some sort. And I was like, I just don't know any more words. I'm stuck.
The thing about that is that like when you do like fast, like I got a little closer, you're still so far away mm-hmm. that it might as well be a random word. Almost.
It's miserable.
Well, we just spent the first 2.5 minutes talking about shit that no one understands except for like 5 people. So that's great. We'll link to this game in the show notes.
I'm just dying to figure out what the hell it was yesterday. It drove me crazy.
Don't want me to tell you?
Yeah, if you know.
Oh, no, it wasn't World, right? You guys didn't do that.
That one. Was the one before.
Kevin spoiled it for me by accident. I wasn't done yet. And he told me it was costly.
Costly?
Yeah.
You're right. I wasn't fucking close at all.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Fuck this.
On to housekeeping.
I got some housekeeping to do. This is a special edition of housekeeping in that none of this has anything to do with Legacy. So it's a disappointing kind of housekeeping. But regardless, I feel like it's our duty to bring up local events that are happening. So first thing off the top, I actually didn't put on the list. Sorry, Quinn. Stronghold is starting up in-person play again. Woo! Legacy Thursday nights. What is it right now? 6 p.m.? 7 p.m.?
6:30.
Split the difference. 6:30 p.m. Hot. Is it still 3 rounds? I don't know.
It's 4
Whatever.
Rounds.
Whatever. Come play Legacy at Stronghold Thursdays, 6:30. Every other thing they're running is probably also starting as well. So if you're looking at like Modern or whatever, that's all happening. The actual events I did want to bring up, I've had linked to me. Thank you very much to both Dylan Dubik and other friend of the show, Rob Cross. There's a Vancouver Battle Royale April 23rd. This is Modern. And this event is actually kind of crazy. It's like Magic is one small aspect of this. This is like kind of like an overall gaming thing. There's like fighting games, trading card games, like Flesh and Blood, fucking Soul Calibur 6, you know, Smash Bros, all kinds of stuff going on. And they're running a Modern tournament there on the 23rd. So you can buy tickets online. We'll link it here if anybody wants to go. Somebody suggested that I try to learn Modern instead of trying to get any of these people to host a Legacy tournament. And on that note, we have a face-to-face Modern tournament June 18th in Burnaby. I tweeted at them, Legacy please, for a side event. They haven't responded. I don't expect them to. But they have Legacy side events at some of the other cities they're going to. So it would be sick if they started one up here. Like, we don't even need a big one, just a little one. Just give us a crumb.
Yeah, you don't need a second Modern tournament.
Yeah, like, what the hell? You're going to have a Modern side event at your Modern main event? What are you doing?
I guess if you, like, does it start later? You, like, scrub out?
I don't know. I saw it was also Modern, and I stopped looking.
I can understand, like, even, like, you know, Standard, Pioneer. I mean, I don't play sure. those, but I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, Modern, mm-hmm. Modern, come on.
I think they have drafts, though. So even if I'm not playing Modern, I might go there and do a draft or two.
Ooh.
That one's at like a Delta Hotel in Burnaby, so I don't know.
What sets out in June? It'll be 2 sets after, right?
Oh god, I don't know. Is Lord of the Rings out then?
Modern Horizons 3.
What even is gonna be The next one's New Capenna, right? Like the Godfather set. Shit. Gotta be some taxes in there.
And then it's, and then after that, it's the Lord of the Rings set, right?
Is it that fast?
Which is straight into modern.
Straight into modern.
Which is terrifying.
Ban Gollum.
Yeah, I don't want to be talking about like Ban Frodo. That just sounds sad. I mean, if it's another card that's overpowered, that's fine. Just specifically, I don't want to have discourse around banning Frodo.
It's 2023. Is Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
So yeah, we're safe from the One Ring fine being found off of Urza Saga for another year at least.
I don't hear like bad beat stories where someone's like, oh, my opponent found Gimli.
Can you believe they had like... the fucking Balrog?
Balrog sounds a little cooler.
It's true.
But, like, yeah.
You know, if it was like the D&D set, there would be like a red instant called like "And My Axe" that like makes like an equipment token or something.
Food potato.
Oh no! Oh no!
What?
Just thinking about this, man.
Oh.
It's interesting to have the kind of, what do they call the other stuff? Universes beyond. It's interesting to have that printed as like an entire set.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care that much because I don't actually care about Magic lore a ton.
Mm-hmm.
But even as someone who doesn't really care about Magic lore a ton, like I don't read the story or anything unless I think that it's going to give me an inside track into like what cards are going to be powerful. It's like kind of a bummer. I don't know.
Yeah, it's... Like, I'm not big on, like, Magic lore either, but at the same part, I still like that it has its own kind of flavor. And I know, like, obviously every set comes out and it's like, oh, yeah, there's fucking robots now. And there's, like, ninjas. And over here, there's, like, you know, Greek gods or whatever. But, like, it still feels like... I like things being done like it's Lord of the Rings, but it's Magic's, you know, way about it. Like, that's... It's cool. And it has... Even if I don't follow like the written stories, seeing stuff like echoed on cards and stuff is cool. And I mean, look, of what it can be, Lord of the Rings compared to fucking what do they do with some of the individual things like
Street Fighter Transformers? 2.
Sorry,
Street Fighter 2,
like Street Fighter 2, like Stranger Things, like trans. Like imagine if this set instead of Lord of the Rings was a straight to modern Transformers set, like that would be bad. At least like. General flavor wise, you know, orcs, elves, medieval stuff all fits. Like the Dungeons and Dragons set was fine, you know, and this is basically just going to be like that, I'm guessing.
This is like by the time we got to like Dominaria, and I was just constantly like, I'm sick of the freaking Gatewatch. And it was like why are they just, all they have is like, oh, Jace is back to tie things together. Like, come on, think of something else. And then the monkey paw curled. And they were like, oh, you want different characters? Here's some other things you know and love. Modern Horizons now... 4, TGIF. I conjure Stephanie Tanner.
I'm going to resolve that's the way the cookie crumbles.
I know, you see, so what happens now is it's on the stack so you can't respond. And Steve Urkel will flip into Stefan Urkel.
Ah.
And he's a planeswalker on the backside.
Oh, what is that? Omori has a cut it out. should we talk about some real cards?
We can talk about real cards, some new cards that actually exist.
Dude, Universe is beyond Full House, though. I would get behind that.
You think the Beach Boys would be in it? Like a cameo? Ooh, Legendary Land, a place called Kokomo.
I can do more Bare Naked Ladies covers then.
It could be like, what's that card that you like? Oh, you gain control of all permanents you own.
Oh, Brand.
No, it's like there's like a land.
It's a land that you gain control of all permanents you own.
Yeah.
Oh, Homeward Path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kokomo could be like that. It used to be like a functional reprint because that's where you want to go.
I would love the secret lair like Aruba, Mahama.
I I can't believe we're not in Watsi's marketing department.
Oh, fuck. I know. This is such an easy win, man.
I think that's the thing that makes this be kind of serious. That's the thing that kind of makes all the secret layers like kind of seem shitty.
Because
they all... I can't remember the last one where I was like, ooh, that's clever. You know,
a clever secret layer?
Like, yeah, like if you see one and you want something, you're like, oh yeah, okay. Like, yeah, I do like Street Fighter, you know, like none of them where you've been like, ooh, that's like really like cool, smart thing they did. Like they're just all like, you'll buy this thing, easy money things, which I mean that's what they're in business for. So more
that's like the example of like a smart one. It's like a pun-based secret layer.
I don't know. I can't think of anything. They've all been like kind of like whatever.
Like is the closest thing like the birds one where they did like the kind of nature drawings of birds?
Yeah, or like the artist ones that even have been, you know, where it's like, oh, like here are some magic artists you know and love, and only one of them has been like a borderline white supremacist. Whoops.
I liked when the Therese Nielsen shit was going down, you know, it was like dual decks, like fucking alt-right versus actually great artist Rebecca Guay.
Yeah.
It's bad that you could fill all the slots of secret lairs now with like right-wing adjacent artists, you know. What's the fucking the actual like KKK guy or Harold
McNeil?
Yeah, you know, Harold McNeil, Therese Nielsen, Zeb McKinnon, Noah Bradley.
Bradley's just a sex creep, right? He's not like he might be left wing. Just
it's true. I think the closest he had though, he had that weird like rules of power thing.
Oh yeah, like one of those pickup artist books.
Yeah, like strategically apologize to like feign retreat, like some shit like that, which is probably more in line with like, I don't know, having a bookshelf of Jordan Peterson stuff, which actually goes back to just being fucking right wing in mentality. But we're missing one more, I guess, hey, to round out like the five slots for a secret lair.
Is it five? Oh, I guess it's always five cards, right? Yeah, because it's they did like the land thing.
Yeah.
Well,
hold on to your idols.
Yeah. Wait another couple months, it'll be fine.
They have like a debt pool of like, you know, we each like take a name and like, you know,
which magic artist gets canceled next.
Yeah.
That could be fun. On the topic of Harold McNeil, so like Invoke Prejudice, on Eternal Dirtles, they were talking about the Invoke cycle in Kamigawa. And they were like, why would they do this? They literally deleted Invoke Prejudice from existence. But every card is like invoke something, and it's three or four black or colored pips, right? They're talking about the black one first and the white one, green one, whatever. Like, didn't they want people to not think about that card? Like, literally just name the cycle anything else. But it's like the same like casting cost structure, and it's invoke something.
It is like the same casting out structure too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it would have, this card does not meet Magic community standards. It may perpetuate racism, contain harmful stereotypes, or depict a sensitive real world event.
Their theory was that if you put like Invoke MTG now, you get like a bunch of other hits instead.
It's like a whitewash.
Yeah. They like buried it away to be like, oh, the KKK guys on the card. You won't see that.
I mean, it would be a pretty big ask to just like Invoke Wildcard is just like not allowed anymore. Because, I mean, look, when you return to fucking Shadowmoor, you got to have, like, the opposite of Evoke, which is, like, Invoke, where you can, like, cast it from your graveyard.
Sure, but their point was, like, why would you make it a cycle?
That's true.
Like, you know, like, there's a card, right? Oh, there was a card in, what's it, is this the Axe? Keldheim. Invoke the Divine. Like, no one's going to be like, oh. But they just made five cards that were, like, invoke something. One colorless, I guess it's, mana, four
it's,
colored
it's
tips.
Invoke and then word, right? It's not like invoke the or invoke it's just, yeah.
Well, there's invoke the Asians and invoke the winds, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I like the theory that they're trying to whitewash the image. It's a big scandal, you know.
What does invoke prejudice do again?
It's like if you cast a spell, maybe it's a creature that shares a color with something, it like costs more mana.
Counter that spell unless they play basically double the casting cost. You have to pay the CMC.
It's like actually kind of sick. Oh, it's if it doesn't share a color. Which, I mean, look, in name and art and artist and effect, it all evokes, you know, they're just going heavy on the theme here. Fuck.
They should have done Invoke Justice as like some kind of like multiculturalism thing.
Mm.
If it doesn't share a color with a card, you could, like, your control like costs less.
Fuck.
Anyways, none of those cards are playable in Legacy. Do you want to talk about some Kamigawa cards that are playable in Legacy?
Are they, though? I just wanted to say the first one on this list here.
They've been played in Legacy in at least a 5-0.
So we did me, Quinn, and you know, Best Kevin and Brendan got together the other day for a couple drafts, and Quinn was showing me, brought his Legacy deck, his ninjas, and you were playing some really messed up stuff in there, man.
It's in the league list. I cribbed it from the league list. and it is a typical ninjas list.
Except
it has four copies of Moon Circuit Hacker, which is a new card that is one in a blue. And it's a 2/1. And when it deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card and discard a card. Unless it's the turn that Moon Circuit Hacker entered the battlefield, and then it has ninjutsu for one blue, which I think like potentially defensible.
Mm-hmm.
The deck also had four copies of Moth Dust Changeling.
This is where my alarm bells started going off.
It's a 1/1/1. It's been in other ninjas lists, and you can tap an untapped creature control and give it flying. And it's a changeling, so it's a ninja. Technically, the problem is that when you jam those eight cards in and you still have four copies of Ornithopter, four copies of Changing Outcast, four Eurekas, four Ingenious Infiltrators, and four copies of the artifact that you hate playing against, Retrofitter Foundry.
Yeah.
You have to cut something else. And so this deck cut all of the Ponders. Going straight back to like 2012 Legacy, where people are like, is Ponder good? I don't know. Is Ponder even good?
Just put better cards in your deck.
Yeah, just why would you already have Brainstorm, you need Ponder. So cut all four Ponders, and then four kill spells. So you really have a hard time finding what you need and interacting with the board, which I think is just on par worse.
Yeah.
But in, I feel like 22 Magic, if you're on the play and you know you maybe draw a Brainstorm and fix your hand and your opponent is just looking past you being like, I'm gonna do this other thing that's stupid, it just spirals out of control really fast because you have extra quote-unquote ninjas that stick around, or you ninja do something good in, and then you like play it back out on the board, or the next turn you like hit them for three Eureka triggers or something, and it's like so hard to come back from that.
Mm-hmm. It does, like, that trigger does stack so much.
It just, like, incidental damage. Every once in a while, you flip a Force of Will, and then they're, like, half dead. So I could see how you could 5-0 a league. I don't think you're going to, like, win a challenge with this list. I don't think it's, like, necessarily better. But also, I mean, this is someone who obviously was just, like, being like, I'm going to try this new card.
Right, like, the actual numbers, if there is some science behind this, will be, you know, trimmed down or around.
Yeah, and maybe like Hacker just is in, because that's one thing about that card is, or one thing about that deck is that like you have to like tap out on turn two if you're going to get something down the board, which sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, playing to open mana. And so being able to like trade an Ornithopter for a 2/1 and then drawing a card and then playing the Ornithopter back out and then having like another island up or something isn't the worst.
Card's also like fucked in Pauper right now.
Yeah.
Imagine this thing with spell setters, right? Like single blue to return it. Oh baby.
Yeah, being able to rebuy a spell setter spread and stuff like that is like,
yeah, I'm just thinking, I think Tristan's probably going to show up with this, if not this week, maybe next week. Some kind of mono blue Delver Spellslayer sprite.
In Legacy, though? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other thing about overloading on creatures is that, like, in other builds, like, typically you're picking up a Changeling Outcast or you're picking up an Ornithopter or you're just, like, eating a token away. But you also had, like, 1 to 2 copies of Brazen Borer and 1 to sometimes 4 copies of Baleful Strix. And, like, man, picking up a Strix and then, like, also, you're in with a Changeling Outcast or something, and then you hit with an Infiltrator, and you draw 2 cards, and you replay your Strix. Like, that is, like, again, it's just, like, back-breaking.
Yeah, that's so good. I was going to ask how many Strix you're playing. But, yeah, like, even, like, pulling back, you know, Brazen Borer or getting to bounce something else, like, that's very big.
Stuff like with Brazen Borer, too, like, there's a weird... Like, it doesn't happen very often, because Brazen Borer is pretty expensive to get down on the board, but you get into situations where you, like, attack with Brazen Borer... and your Rico, and your opponent's like, okay, like, I block your Rico, obviously. And then you return the Brazen Borer into your hand before damage, because it's, like, unblocked.
Ooh!
And then you ninja do something in, and then you bounce whatever's blocking your Rico, and then you get, like, 2 triggers.
Okay, that's insane.
Well, if you put, like, an Infiltrator in,
for example,
you get 2 triggers, right?
That's insane.
Where, you know, if you have 4 Mothdust Changeling in your deck, like, you're not rebuying utility cards, you're just playing Mothdust Changeling after combat.
I like that you pointed this out when I was talking to you before, that you can just, like, you know, when your Rico can't get in and it's just sitting on the board, just tap your Rico, jump your Mothdust Changeling, fly in there.
That's the alternative, which is actually, like, there's lots of situations where you're like, great, I have your Rico on board now and just never is gonna attack again.
Mm-hmm. Right, like, you, it gets in, you get that one hit, and you're like, okay, I'm sitting here.
Yeah, and I drew 2 lands or something, and you're like, now what?
Yep.
Should we move on to D&T? You got 2 new toys.
I did. I got 2 new cards in here. We got the Lion Sash, which has been pretty neat. And, you know, for anybody who doesn't know this yet, it's 1 and a white for an artifact creature equipment cat. Just a whole mouthful there. You can pay 1 white and exile a card from a graveyard. If it's a permanent, it gets a +1/+1 counter on it. Also, the equipped creature gets +1/+1 for each +1/+1 counter on Lion Sash. Notably, it doesn't get +1/+1 just nakedly. It's only for the counters. And then reconfig for 2, and it's a 1/1. So this is like a super easy one of to include in the deck because you're effectively, I mean, it's double recruiterable because you can get it off Stoneforge or you can get it off Recruiter. And, you know, just being able to find it with 8 cards in your deck is massive. The way deck building is going lately, I mean, you can hear JR talk about this a lot, like, just Legacy in general is kind of shifting away from, like, you know, the one of recruitable bullets and just being more powerful overall. I just fumbled all of that. So on that note, like, it's I'm curious to see where it ends up, but I mean, I've been playing online with 1 copy and super easy to include, you know, we cut, like, Soul Guide Lantern, which the deck was playing, to hit off of Saga. This has a lot of relevance just against a bunch of decks. Like, I mean, it's better than stuff like Soul Guide Lantern against, like, Delver, because you just keep eating their graveyard. It also, you know, gets bigger. And it's also, this came up when I was playing as Lance today, like, in a way, kind of removal proof. If you can get it down on a turn, you know, they can't decay it or whatever. Well, decay will get it anyways, but they can't, like, Punishing Fire it or something else. If you just get it in and then just equip it on something, like, they have to actually play artifact removal to deal with it, or, you know, kill the creature and then kill the artifact. Yeah. So I was able to just, like, chuck it on and recruit the guard because they can only, like, cast what the hell's the thing? The Punishing Fire. They only Punishing Fire, like, 1 thing that turn. So I just chucked it on there. And then, you know, next turn, go to town. So very cool. I picked up 4 in paper, which have arrived now. I got them right here. Lots of fun. We'll see where it ends up. It's a nice toolbox thing for D&T to have. You know, I don't think anybody really expected the Scavenging Ooze Bear, as we were all kind of looking for, you know, Rip Bear, which this is markedly worse than, but definitely when thinking about what the possibilities could be, it wasn't something that would be like findable by Stoneforge and by Recruiter.
They're eventually going to make a Rip Baron. I'm going to be so mad. Like, that's unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is fine. Like, just like Graveyard Hate, you have to like put mana into and like, yeah, sure, have your thing. But like, just being able to tutor up a Rest in Peace and then also like beat your face to death every time. I'm just going to be so upset.
It kind of exists like Sanctifier on Beck. You know, the pro black and red, it comes into play and it rips all the black and red stuff. But like, it's funny because it turns out that that's just like not good enough. It is funny when it works though. And you know, they're just like, oh shit. Also of note of Lion Sash, like sure, it's a thing that just gets bigger, but like I just equipped it on a Solitude today and was just like, okay, like I'll gain 10 life a turn when I'm attacking with this thing. Like I'm just abyssing my opponent and just going up to like, you know, 50 life. So just the old making things big is very handy. And then the other card is, to the surprise of nobody, Iganjo, Seat of the Empire. This is one of the channel lands, the white one, taps for white, and you can channel for a pretty low cost of only two and a white, and it's also reduced by legendary creatures you control. It does 4 damage to an attacking or blocking creature.
I have to say, I'm upset that this gets cheaper under Thalia.
Right,
that's like kind of the inverse. On.
Yeah, I mean, you can cast this for 1 mana in the deck if you got a Yorion and a Thalia out.
If you have a Yorion, you need the discount. You already got lots of lands, but like
this is true.
Like you're taxing me and then killing my poor Blighted Agent, and you get a discount like that. That's
it's
upsetting.
So this is absolutely free to play like 2 copies of in like your, you know, your Orion DMT deck. I've been playing 3 online just because there's like a bunch of Delver around and like, you know, I don't mind having the extra lands. I don't know. It's sweet. It's I'm not looking forward to playing against it from something like lands that you can just like, you know, recur this to just murder stuff because you can't protect from it. You know, you can't stop it with like Thalia doesn't stop it. Mom doesn't stop it. Sanctum Prelate doesn't stop it. These effects in general are, I'd say, pretty bad. Like, not in terms of like strength, but just like for things that I want to see with the game.
Yeah, I want Magic to be interactive.
Yeah. I tweeted when this stuff was getting spoiled about how much cooler these would be if they had Grandeur. Which do you remember what Grandeur does?
No, that was like before my or in between my times, I guess.
It was in what Time Spiral? Is it Corlash, Heir of the Black Blade or something? It's like a black creature, you know, plus X for lands you control or something. But you can pay the Grandeur cost, and it's basically the exact same thing as channel. It's just if you have this legendary thing in play, you can discard another copy of it to do whatever effect. So I wish they did that with these lands because that would make it less of like an auto include. You'd be running the risk of, you know, you'd have to play multiples. The second one's obviously only good if it's spell and the other one's in play. So it isn't just like an absolute free roll. I think it would be a really interesting design space, but obviously that doesn't work with like the stuff that actually has channel in the rest of the set.
We were talking about this earlier before we started recording too, and like there should have been some downside. Like you should have been a pain land or, you know, tapped for colorless, or if you want to make a color, you know, it dings you.
Mm-hmm.
Just something. It doesn't have to be big. Might be too big, but I don't know.
Even like the fast land rules they had on the man lands or whatever in the D&D set, something like that. Something. Because just being like, you know, the only restriction is that you can't have multiples in play at the same time. Like, that's not really a restriction, especially like stuff like, what's the blue one? Otaru or something?
Otawaru.
Yeah. Stuff like that, where it's like, what does it cost? 5 to use it or 4?
4, 3 and blue.
Yeah. Like the actual like mana cost of that stuff, once it gets up there, it's a lot harder, right? Like you run into multiples and you're like, this is quite bad. But like you know, even if you're kind of stuck on mana and it would be like, you really wish that second Iganjo was like another planes, like you're only spending three mana to like kill something. So it's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Otowaru though, didn't make the league lists in one deck where I think it only got a discount with Karn. But I guess if you're playing a Karn deck, you know, you're playing Ancient Tomb and probably City of Traders.
It counts legendary creatures, not legendary permanents.
Oh, isn't it legendary? I thought it was creatures or planeswalkers.
It can bounce artifacts, creatures, enchantments, or planeswalkers, but it costs one less for each legendary creature you control.
Okay, well, that deck had no discount, but I did see a deck that was playing, I think it was also Oswald Fiddlebender, but it was Amri and Sai. So conceivably, you're bouncing something for one blue, but I mean, that's like, you know, I think if you have all three of those out, you're probably winning the game anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one's sweet too. This one's on kind of an interesting spot in like a free roll, because this is the kind of one where you don't want to overload on the effect anyways. Like, you know, just a one of. Like, I think Iganjo is pretty easy in decks that want it to play like at least two. You know, there was an Esper Vial list that came seventh on one of the challenges from Francis York Morgan, which is, look, I'm not going to start the Esper Vial watch. But, you know, he was playing one in there. And again, there's basically like no discounts. You have the Fibblethip and the Baron. But like, just as a, you know, it's a land. You don't get got by choke. You know, you can actually do things. Speaking of that, I guess, do you think those Merfolk decks that used to play like Minamo or something, strictly so you don't get got by Boil and Choke, like, they gotta just upgrade to these now, right? Or like a better split?
Yeah. Like, you could play each, one of each.
One Baby.
I guess we should just keep going and talk about Besager.
Sure.
Which I think everyone knows about. This is the one where it seems under-costed. Getting a land is a cost. I think it's fine for Standard.
Yeah, which absolutely.
A thing we have to, I think, always have to kind of keep in mind. Even then, though, I feel like artifacts and enchantments, it's just like, I don't know, part of magic is like, you just got to watch out for those on the sideboard. And you know, you gotta, your opponent's like main decking Rip for some reason, you know?
Yep.
And they just get you. And now you just have these like random outs, which is what I don't really like Prismatic Ending either.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. You know, the times we talk about Prismatic Ending, like enchantments in particular are like so sticky. And like, that's a good thing, I'd say. You know, like enchantments themselves don't typically win the game. They might like by way of choke or, you know, Blood Moon, but like, it's not like they're actively doing something that wins the game so much as like they're stopping something or affecting something that way. And like being able to just like have a land that deals with artifact, enchantment, or non-basic land, like, that's big, man.
Blows up a Trinisphere for a mere two mana.
Yeah, it doesn't get taxed. That's like, so sweet. Oh boy.
It's sweet when you're doing it. Kind of sucks. When I'm the one doing it, I'd be like, oh, that was sweet. And then I'll be like, I feel so dirty.
Blows up you know, your Thespian stage after you copy a Dark Depths or something. Like, It's rough. And the fact too that these aren't like split, you know, like land and spell specifically, it's like an ability, is that's crazy. Oddly enough,
creatures can get hexproof and stuff, you know, there's like cards for that. Someone who's cast many Vines of Vastwood in his day, I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, you're not playing anything that like gives your rest in peace hexproof. You just can't interact with it.
Sterling Grove.
Stifle, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's odd. And funnily enough, too, I've been playing like a few leagues this week, just, you know, getting my Lion Sashes money worth. And I have not ran into a single Besager yet.
How much are they online? Is it because they're like so expensive?
Oh, that's true. I think they're like maybe 40 tickets or something.
Yeah, but, I'd be waiting that out on a standard rare.
Yeah. The other two lands, I don't even want to bring up. Nobody's playing them.
What is the red one? Makes 2/1s.
Yeah.
And what the black one mills three cards, then you return a creature or planeswalker to your hand.
That's right. And I think it's also four mana. And I am lying. Reaple Cheap is playing one of those in Curses because, as he put it, and as we put it, it's free.
Like, it might get back a card.
Yep, exactly. Like, does it do something most of the time? Probably not. But there's going to be a game where you just get back a card, and that's great.
What does it cost you? One swamp.
Yep.
Do you think this this turtle card is going to be any good? We're recording on like February 10th, so we haven't really seen it. I'm just kidding. It's February 23rd. The turtle is good.
Mm-hmm.
For anyone who good. Doesn't know, Kappa Cannoneer, it kind of seems like unplayable. It's cost 5 and a blue, so I don't know how you ever get it on the board. And it's only a 4/4. It's got Ward 4, which is great. It's basically Hexproof in Legacy. And whenever an artifact enters the battlefield under control, you put a +1/+1 counter on Kappa Cannoneer, and it can't be blocked this turn. But Jeff, at like 5 and a blue, like how do you even play this?
That's a big cost.
What does improvise mean, by the way?
There's a lot of words after it. I'm not going to read it.
Some standards that I didn't really notice.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know what improvise means, your artifacts can help cast the spell. Each artifact you tap after you've done activating mana, you're done activating mana abilities, pays for one. So basically you tap your,
it's like convoke bubbles, for artifacts.
Yeah, your chalices. When did improvise come out?
It was in the Kaladesh, the second Kaladesh set, I think. I want to say though, I've read the text on improvise before. Like I know what it does, I know how it works, but like reading the text now, like your artifacts can help cast this spell. Doesn't that seem, what does McBain say about some of like the old school cards where they're like kind of descriptive of like, you know, what you might be doing as opposed to like, I don't know.
That's directly, funny. That's like a direct analog to Convoke though, right?
Does it say on Convoke that your creatures can help cast the spell?
I think so.
It's very like flavor, you know?
Yeah.
Where's like my your instants and sorceries on the stack can help cast this spell? I want to tap my sorceries that are on the stack.
Your creatures can help cast this spell.
Damn. Reading this turtle again? Obviously it's good. Obviously it's picking up results everywhere. Obviously it's worth fucking like 120 tickets on Magic Online.
It's $20 in paper.
It's almost like a true name situation with that commander set.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that it gets counters. I thought I got just like +1/+1 to end a turn.
It also sees itself.
It sees itself.
So it actually comes down as a 5/5.
Holy shit.
And it's unblockable if for some reason you can give it haste.
Wow. This is a strong turtle. The really interesting thing that it does for all the decks that it's seeing playing. Like I think when it came out, everybody was kind of like level one brain, you know, like I'll just put in an 8 cast and I'll fucking go off with Psy and have this giant turtle and just attack them once and they'll die. And then people kind of were realizing like, you don't really have to do anything. Like you don't need other pieces to get this engine.
You need to live for like 3 turns.
Yeah. Like you just play some artifacts and stuff, you know, baubles, chalice, whatever. Tap them all to cast this thing on like turn 2. And then you just play like an artifact a turn. Because like you said, Ward 4 means nothing is happening. Like what's the cheapest way you could actually deal with this? Is like pitching like a Solitude and paying 4?
No, well, yeah, but Pulverize.
Oh, yeah.
Pulverize and Seeds of Innocence are the only two things I can think of. I guess Terminus.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Supreme Verdict and stuff. But, like, that's strong, man. You know, where my brain went looking at this Turtle Menace, too, is like, what are these decks going to do about a resolved Peacekeeper? Oh, that's nice. You're unblockable, Turtle. Too bad you can't attack.
Brazen Borrower?
Ward 4.
No, I mean on the Peacekeeper.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sure. I got to give my Peacekeeper Ward 4. Where's that piece of equipment?
I'm surprised this thing doesn't have reconfigure, actually.
Oh, equip the turtle? And then, dude, the way it's worded, I bet it had reconfigure.
Look at the way it's drawn, too. Like, that cannon's part of him.
Blastoise.
Yeah. I do think this is an example of a card, though, like True Name Nemesis, that could potentially become problematic in other formats, that is well-designed for Commander.
This is a sweetened commander.
Yeah. It doesn't like kill the whole table at once, but it like it's a big thing. You like bash whoever's in the lead.
Yep.
You know, I think there's probably some like really spiky commander players who are like, it doesn't do anything. What are you gonna kill the whole table? Like, no, you don't kill the whole table every time, commander. Sometimes you just have to keep one person honest, and like this helps you keep someone honest. And there's like cool plays in commander where you like play this, and then the next turn you like spell swindle someone's like Eldrazi, and then it just gets gigantic.
My god. Do you think you just play this and then you play Dockside Extortionist?
Oh yeah, because that makes copies, right?
No, Dockside Extortionist, that's, you get a treasure for every treasures, artifact yeah. Oh, and enchantment. Treasures, yeah, you just get like 15 treasures.
Something like that.
Bonk. It's also seeing play in like, this is like, you know, I haven't played against it too much, so I think I played against it once, but like the play pattern doesn't seem great. It doesn't seem very fun in Legacy. Obviously, it's extremely strong and you can't really deal with it at all. You know, Cavern on Turtle is a real thing. But like, it's interesting to see a card that's individually powerful that is kind of going in multiple places and not in like a prismatic ending way where it's like you just put it in and there's like no other cost to it.
Yeah, you have like, to play a lot of artifacts.
Yeah. Like it's kind of revitalized like the like Bomberman lists, you know, there's some Gyruda Bomberman lists playing Kappa Cannoneer, which I mean, that gets my motor running. That's very cool.
Well, those Bomberman lists have a mini turtle too. Patchwork automaton.
Oh yeah, look at this automaton. Transition.
How you pronounce that?
Automaton.
Automaton. It's a two colorless. It's a 1/1 that has a ward 2. Whenever you cast an artifact spell, it gets a +1/+1 counter.
No spell swindles here.
Yeah, a little less powerful, but both cards become infinitely large with just the Bomberman combo. Like you don't even have to find the Walking Ballista. If you have one of these and it's like, you know, turn it can attack.
This really feels like the kind of, honestly, the better version of, what's the white one, Ingenious Smith? Where it's like the 2-mana 1/1 and you like you can find something, but then it gets a counter when you play an artifact, which is limited to once a turn. So, I mean, obviously the digging is relevant when that's indexed, but like this thing gets very big, very fast. And even like Ward 2, like that's a cost.
Yeah, it's a 3-mana source of Plowshares.
Mm-hmm. It's getting wild out here, man.
I have all these cards, and I have too many Magic cards in paper now. And like we only play paper once a week, and so like I own Bomberman, and I've never played it a single time.
You gonna play it tomorrow?
I won't. I'm going to hockey game tomorrow.
Oh!
So if I'm not the first person you know who catches the Omicron variant twice, then the week after.
I'll be there
if my turtles arrive. My turtles haven't arrived yet.
I saw Akasha's turtles got canceled.
Yeah. Well, Tristan found us them for $1.50 each, and then I forgot to buy them, and they sold out. And then I found them for $3 each, and I was like, oh, like it's extra like $6. Like, like you know, it's like not a big deal, but some of those things where you're like, oh, it's like a booster pack or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I like looked and I'm like, oh, wow, the $20. Huh, $3. Wow, I'm a genius.
So you saw them for $3, felt that way, and then still ordered them. Just like, you know, feeling bad. So okay, I was that's like, good.
I'm going to use these. This is good enough. It's like $3, you know, and a lot. Again, I was thinking like I lost $6 and just kind of kicking myself.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Because I get in the mindset of like, I already missed the shot, you know? Ah, fuck, I didn't get them for $1.50.
If they were like $10, I would have been like, ah, I'm out.
Yeah.
The $1.50 problem was that I filled my cart and I was like, I have 4 turtles and nothing else. It's $6. I'm like, okay, like I'll buy a copy of Consider. I need one of those. I'm like, that's $8. Doesn't seem worth it yet. And then they went up to $3 each and 12. I was like, well, I'll order that, I guess.
Free shipping.
Still got to consider. So we'll see what gets here first, whether I get Tempo Doomsday pieces. Or the big turtle, and that'll be the return to paper legacy for me.
Gross.
What if I play a Delver of Secrets against you? How many times has that happened?
I don't like this. We've shifted timelines.
What if I play a Tarmogoyf? I would never. I don't know.
In my reality, Quinn always played Infect. Now you're telling me he plays Delver.
He only plays bad Delver in my reality. Why would he play good Delver?
I think most of the rest of the cards we have on this list here probably fall under the bad category.
I think Hidetsugu Consumes All is real.
That's true. Hidetsugu Consumes All is cool. I mean, Elliot was immediately playing this.
Yeah, so this is a saga. Cost one colorless, black and red. Chapter one is destroy each non-land permanent with mana value one or less. Chapter two is exile all graveyards. And then when it flips, it's a 3-3 trample. Whenever deals combat... Oh, when it never deals damage, actually, pardon me.
Yeah.
Put a plus one counter on it.
Make it like fight something.
Or just if they chump block. I thought I had to like actually hit something.
Yeah.
And then whenever Vessel of All-Consuming deals damage to a player, this is Commander, players will love this. If it has dealt 10 or more damage to that player this turn, they lose the game.
It's interesting.
Which I mean, another, like, can you like you could like hit someone for five and then fling it at them?
Yeah.
Or does fling deal the damage?
No, because doesn't the creature deal the damage with fling? Because isn't there like some infect fling thing? There'll be like whole command. I don't know. Whatever. If you're playing this,
fling deals damage. Oh, well, whatever.
Snoozer. You Chandra's Ignition. There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're playing this, it really depends on how good the first mode is. Because like the 3-mana thing to exile all graveyards a turn after.
Yeah.
Not great. And it is kind of funny that like the most of the stuff you're destroying with the chapter one is going to be like all shit you don't really care about having exiled. A lot of these sagas they did in the set, they feel like there's a couple effects just kind of shoved together that don't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think this makes sense in like limited.
Sure, sure. But yeah. I just mean like, does one have to do with the other, you know?
Well, you kill things, then you exile them, right? That makes sense. That's
fine, I guess. So this seems fine. Seems it's the kind of thing that's in an interesting spot. Like, you know, the cap on like non-land permanent with one or less, like, that is very contextual on what the format looks like. So it puts the card in an interesting spot, right? This isn't something you just jam all the time and it's great. But like, you know, having black red have this out to, I don't know, fucking if you care about like, you know, Chalice or Vile or Mom or, you know, Construct tokens or whatever. Like, it's very interesting to have something that just covers all of those and then also flips into something that, you know, will kill somebody.
Because I mean, it's a 3-3 attacker. Like a Delver and a DRC is like pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, like a 3-3 attacker. I mean, yeah, flip Delver, DRC, you know, some other stuff can like block and die, but like you can't jump it. And like as soon as it hits once, like if you don't have something to deal with it right away, like it's big. You know, if it gets through one time, it becomes a 6-6.
Someone's going to play this against me and they're going to kill Hierarch, and Glistener Elf, which will put me at a low enough mana or available mana that I can't activate Inkmoth Nexus and then become immense to them to kill them. Then the second chapter will happen and the graveyard will go away and then I'll draw a land and just like look up and be like, I fucking hate this card. But no, it's, I don't know. It's like, yeah, I think it's conditional. It's like a card that's going to see some play. It's like a pretty like nice addition to the format.
I want to step onto the next card I think is interesting. I want to kind of do these in reverse order. I guess there's two that would... One's probably better, but I want to go with the one that I like more. And you might like more, too. Experimental Synthesizer. This card is sweet.
Yeah. I mean, it's just... As a card, it's cool.
Yeah.
Experimental Synthesizer, it's a one mana, one red artifact. Sorry, it just cost one red. That kind of cost one red. You put it on the battlefield. It's an artifact. When Experimental Synthesizer enters or leaves the battlefield, exile the top card of your library until end of turn you may play that card. It's a little bit like pseudo card advantage. And then for two and a red, you can sack it and make it 2/2.
White Samurai with Vigilance.
Activate only as a sorcery,
mm-hmm.
which I get why they do that, and I wish they didn't, because like, look, man, a 3-mana onboard combat trick, that should be fine.
But this card's sweet. Like, obviously, in the scope of Legacy, the only place it really fits is probably some kind of Painter thing, unless, like, one of those, like, Anvil decks in, like, Modern Takeoff. But, like, it does feel a little bit like the spot that Painter would have, you know, Astrolabe, or even top in some circumstances, you know, where you can just, you have nothing going on. You just start cycling synthesizers and just drawing cards.
What's that? There's that artifact too. What's this? Andrews release a battlefield, you draw a card.
Oh, Mycosynth Wellspring? Or is it the one that finds a land? Ichor Wellspring.
Yeah, and Callum, who's like the only competent painter player we really, you know, ever kind of remotely converse with. he was saying, I don't see this replacing Ichor Wellspring just because, like, you don't draw the card, especially in a deck that plays like, you know, 4 to 8 copies of Red Blast. You know, like, you're like, what do you do when you flip that? You're just like, great, I have a Red Blast.
That's true.
But other than Red Blast, like, every other card in Painter is like pretty low cost.
It's also just the kind of card where, like, even if it's not immediately like good enough to go in something here and be like, oh, that's the card for this deck, you know, oh, it revitalized it or whatever. Like, it does an interesting thing at a low enough mana cost that someday, you know, we'll use this to some effect, which is cool to see.
Some card will be printed, and then if you draft and you were smart and you kept the stack of this common that you had from like drafting, or if you open boxes, a card will be printed, and then you'll go to card game and be like, holy shit, they'll pay me 50 cents for my stack of experimental synthesizers. What happened?
Okay, on to the next one, which is probably more real, but I think is also a pipe dream. Containment Construct.
Yeah, so Containment Construct, we should have linked. What's the other card? It's like the one blue enchantment.
Artificer's Intuition.
Artificer's Intuition.
You don't got that locked down?
No. Do you know what it is?
Oh yeah. It's one in a blue. Here, this is from memory, okay. It's one in a blue is an enchantment from, I think it's from Fifth Dawn.
You're correct.
You can pay a blue and discard, I think, any artifact. Yep. And you can search your deck for an artifact that costs 0 or 1 mana and put it in your hand.
1 or less.
Sure.
I don't know. You can get a
negative 1 mana cost artifact.
Mox Tantalate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. You got me there.
Yes.
So Containment Construct is an artifact creature that costs 2, and it's a 2/1, which are my favorite stats for a 2-mana artifact creature. It is regrettably not a horror. It's a construct. And whenever you discard a card, you can exile that card from your graveyard. And if you do, you may play that card this turn. So basically you give everything madness, but you still have to care about timing restrictions. You can't, like, you know, somehow instant speed discard a Thoughtseize and get them in their draw step. But I remember Artificer's Intuition. I do not remember the lengths of this whole combo. I think Callum was talking about it, and then Jax kind of posted, like, you know, I figured out the math, and it's like you have LEDs and you have Elixir of Immortality.
Yeah, so you have to have Containment Construct and Artificer's Intuition, and then, like, I guess, like, any artifact, and you discard an artifact, get one of your LEDs. You discard the LED, get another LED. Discard your LED, get another LED. Discard your LED, get another LED. You play your LEDs and... No, wait, that's not right. Oh, yeah, the fourth LED. Fourth LED, play it out. You have to crack the other three first, because you have to be able to get the card in your hand. Anyways, the last card you get is...
Elixir of Immortality.
Elixir of Immortality.
Yeah. Which, 1 mana artifact, 2 tap. You gain 5 life and shuffle your graveyard into your library.
Yeah. And then you just start the loop again, basically.
Just keep doing that. Gain infinite life, get a shitload of mana, and then you can just find a Ballista.
That's a lot of things have to go right.
You just have to keep a 2/1 on board after you resolve a shitty enchantment that's useless otherwise.
Yeah, like, if you're gonna deal this all in the same turn, then you need like 5 mana, right?
Yeah.
And then your opponent has to be able to interact with none of the pieces.
Yep.
So yeah.
I think you need more than 5 mana, because you can't cast your LED with the search on the stack. So you have to, like, play the construct, play the intuition, activate
intuition. You need 6 mana, 3 which are blue, if you want to do this in one turn.
It takes some work. It takes some work, but it's sweet. And like, that's the kind of stuff too, where it's like stuff that is kind of outside combo enablers is cool.
I think like the combo that exists is not good enough, but Containment Construct is another card, like Experimental Synthesizer, where something could happen at some point, you know, where even this is just like, maybe it's just part of like a value engine, or it's like some backdoor thing you put in a deck that's trying to do something else. Like, it has a relatively unique effect that I think like just this card could find a home somewhere.
Right. Like, will it be the Vampire Hexmage to our Thespian stage?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We're on to, I think, what I can safely call the dregs now.
I think Kaido Shizuki might be real.
Really?
It's a 3-mana planeswalker.
It is.
So it's 1BB. It's a planeswalker with 3 loyalty. It's +1 is draw a card, then discard a card unless you attack this turn. It's -2 is create a 1/1 blue ninja creature token with this creature can't be blocked. And the, I never get getting the -7. It does a fucking thing on -7 that, like,
you, when you,
not even, it's not even that good.
A creature hits a player, you can search for a blue or black creature and put it into play.
I mean, that's good. It doesn't win the game, but
like, fine. I mean, you're realistically, you're finding like a Baleful Strix.
Yeah. The first two things though, like you can create a woman and can protect itself when it needs to, and it can draw a card, but does it need to protect itself on the first turn? Because the beginning of your end step, if Kaito Shizuki entered the battlefield this turn, he phases out.
That's cool.
This happened to me in Standard, where my opponent played this card, made the ninja, I untapped, portable hold the ninja, and then went to all attack and couldn't figure out why I didn't have the option to attack the planeswalker. And then there was this swirling thing, and I'm like, oh, fuck, it's phased out. Oh, it's bad for me.
Damn. Like, I just don't know what this does in Legacy.
I think potentially you can play it in ninjas.
Just because it is also a ninja? Like, is
no,
because
the plus one is essentially just going to be draw a card.
Yeah.
It creates something you can ninja into off of.
It does.
And if it resolves, like, you can keep attacking, right? That turn. Like, you don't have to protect it by leaving a card back to block.
That is the most interesting thing about it, is that you don't have to protect it the first turn. But I don't know, man.
Like, you can play this, like, you do your ninjutsu thing, then you can play this card, draw a card, and then you're going to untap and draw 2 cards.
Yeah.
It's like 3 cards for 3 mana.
You better have bought one, and you better replace your Mothless Changelings with a Kaido Shizuki.
I've not bought them yet because all the people selling them locally got them out of collector boosters, and it's just like, so I could have 8 different versions other than the one I want, which is just this normal one.
Are the other ones like neon ones? What are the other ones? Anime?
No, there's like, I don't know, like a full art foil, regular foil. I think there might be some promo. I don't know.
Well, there is like a neon one. Well, okay, it's an anime one. I don't know, man. This collector booster shit. Oh, also worth noting, what is it? The red Hidetsugu? Oh, that's the regular Hidetsugu, right? It's not consumes all, it's the actual creature.
No, it's the
red
one. Yeah, like the creature.
$100.
Yeah, like, the creature, which is super cool.
Not yeah, for dude, I played that in Limited. I didn't realize until I had it out that it can hit anything with like the trigger.
Yeah.
That's fucked.
You want to go to the true dregs now?
Oh, do I ever.
This was in a 5-0 list. So we didn't just pull these cards being like, these might be playable. Someone 5-0'd with Reckoner Bankbuster, which I think is still probably not a card we'll see more of in Legacy, but like slightly more defensible. It's a 2-mana artifact vehicle. So it's a 4/4. It's a crew 3, which seems like a big cost. And by the time you have 3 power on board, like, why are you crewing this thing?
Mm-hmm.
It enters a battlefield with 3 charge counters on it. And then you can 2 and tap it to remove a charge counter and draw a card. And then if there are no charge counters on it, you create a treasure token and a 1/1 pilot with the text, this creature creates vehicles as though its power were 2 greater. Also, a reminder that most players don't understand the stack, but this card exists.
This card has so much text on it. This is rough. I saw, I want to say it was, I think PVDH talking about this too. Was talking about the list. It might have been somebody else, but their basic take was that Reckoner Bankbuster, bad. Very bad. Don't play it. But the other janky equipment or vehicle that's in the deck, Shorakai Genesis Engine. I'm saying this like it was great. this is from the Commander set. It's 2 white-blue for an 8/8 with crew 8.
8? Yeah.
But it has 1 tap, draw 2 cards, discard a card, create a 1/1 colorless pilot with this creature cruise vehicles as though it power 2 or greater. So, look, you can eventually make enough pilots to crew this thing, but in reality, this is just a thing you play out where you can just keep looting.
Imagine being in the 4-0 bracket and your opponent taps like Tundra, Tropical Island, Plains. What do you think? What do you think is going to happen?
Definitely not either of these two vehicles.
They've played Life from the Loam. They prismatic ending some of your shit. They pondered a bunch of times. And they played a Growth Spiral on the turn before this happened.
That's just a normal like Jace list, you know? Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Instead of Jace the Mind Sculptor, you get Shorakai the Genesis Engine.
Yeah, I can't imagine this is good. I did realize, too, I have one more card to add to this list we don't have on here. Do you have a guess what this card might be? It's also a commander card.
Oh. I feel like I should, but I don't.
All right. I was told to call this from Kristen, Swords to Mazdas, but Swift Reconfiguration.
Yeah.
PVDH has been playing Devoted Druid Swift Reconfiguration. This list looks fucking crazy. There's all kinds of crazy shit in here. There's that Planeswalker from Strixhaven that has the X cost where it makes like shard tokens, which are, they're basically clues, right?
Yes.
And he's also playing Thrasios, Triton Hero, more commander cards. There's the 4-mana scry one, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a land, put it into play tapped, otherwise draw a card. So basically, just a bunch of ways, once you have the Devoted Druid and infinite green mana, to just draw your whole deck, or play Karn and just find a Walking Ballista. The deck seems kind of sweet. It seems pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's kind of a 2-card combo. I mean, you have enough payoffs, it's a 2-card combo, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, might be good enough. I do have to say, with respect to Tristan, I believe Phil Blackman called it Swords to Car Shares.
Ooh.
Which is much better.
That is better.
Especially because it's like crew 3 or something. You're like, you need
5
crew 5. You got a full lift.
Right. You got one of those like Uber ride shares.
Yeah, you can't Uber afford pools. I guess Uber Pool doesn't exist anymore, right?
Probably not.
Like that's like Uber Omicron. They'll bring it right to you.
The deck seems sweet though. This seems like a lot of fun. And you know, it's serviceable as like a removal spell in a pinch because it has flash, but you know, crew 5, if you're trying to remove a creature with it, like that's, people can overcome that if they need to.
What are you playing this on though, where once they get to 5 power, that's not just like better?
That's true. Yeah, that's a quite a good point.
The downside though is this doesn't turn off like Grizzlebrand. Turns off Grizzlebrand's flavor text.
I think some of these the meat first lists had it somewhere in there where it was like, look, now you can't deal with my Grizzlebrand. It's a build your own bargain.
This sounds like a deck we should stream though.
Oh yeah, that's great. I think the current queue for streaming is that dwarf list. The holy shit, what's her name? The dwarf that makes treasures. Then you stack all the treasures with the fucking the artifact where you can tap two artifacts, to untap an artifact.
Then you just get go Corvald find or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's gonna be the perfect pile of shit Magda. To draft. Magda. And this also is a great spot to draft. And I don't think Swift Reconfiguration quite has the turtle effect yet where it's worth $1 million. So maybe I should snag them while they're available.
I don't think it'll ever have the turtle effect.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's another card for the Heliod's Pilgrim, Esperville, though.
Yes. You need to 5-0 with that. Just dude, like to get your name out there in like the Esperverse pile. Yeah. Like you'll become another Jeff, you know?
Do you know what the worst part is though? That's a Jeff Lynn idea. He was posting lists with it.
Oh. Then you're See, instead of
he's being, already done it.
Instead of being another Jeff, you're just another Jeff.
That's right.
Sorry.
Look, there's any kind of bizarre combination of bad cards you can put together in those three colors. Jeff's done it.
So, obviously, in paper, you're mostly kind of like limited D&T. Let's say collections were no problem. Tomorrow you're going to Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
What of these new things are you trying to sleeve up?
If I have everything I need, I would play this PVDH combo with the card, Devoted Druid. That seems like it has the most wow factor, you know? Like, you sit down against somebody and they're like, oh, okay, you kind of have this like Bant thing, Prismatic Ending. Okay, sure. Like, Devoted Druid? I feel like Devoted Druid in particular, you see, and you're like, nobody's doing anything nice to Devoted Druid. Nobody plays Devoted Druid to go up 2 mana, you know? Like, there's some business going on there. And that certainly has the biggest payoff over, I think, the longest period of time. Because like you're playing, you know, Kappa Cannoneer, Bomberman, whatever. I will say, though, the runner-up is JR. Just as we're recording right now, tweeted out, he 5-0'd with a mix of the Kappa Cannoneer, Bomberman, and Artificer's Intuition. The same deck list, a thing of beauty.
Wow.
So buy those now. But I mean, I guess I'm missing all the LEDs.
Yeah, there's a lot of things probably. Well, Artificer Intuition also is already like $20 or something.
Is that Greg Hatch from that famous, like, he was all in the Artificer Intuition shit, wasn't he? There were some old, like, SCG videos.
But yeah, Intuition already popped. I did not buy any, but if anyone wants to trade for a set of Griffin Canyons, I'll do that straight up. Griffin Canyons reserve list, so I'm cutting a deal here. Shall we take her home?
I think so. I think this has been enough fucking trash.
But it was mostly positive trash.
It was.
I feel like we don't even lift it back up with That's Gas, but we will lift it back up with a segment we like to call That's Gas, where we end on a positive note. Jeff, would you like to go first?
I would.
Let me go first because we don't know this person that I'm doing.
Okay,
you know, that's fine. You're going to do like someone we know personally. Love is a friend. Mine, still though, congratulations to Sam, probably better known as Fenris Cloud. He and his partner had a new baby girl. Yeah, I think his Twitter announcement said there's a new spark in the universe. It's like perfect little mix of... Little nerd injection in there, liked it.
This is his first kid too, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Congrats, Sam. This is the start of our parasocial relationship. I follow you on Twitter. Why don't you respond?
We've got real into Eminem territory there. Why don't we turn this around? You can That's Gas someone.
I want to shout out, friend of the show. I believe we've probably done this before, but, you know, based on good recent events of a lot of fun, Brendan Lensick is absolutely gas. We had a very small get together that I alluded to earlier. Just Best Kevin, Brendan, myself, and Quinn. We met up at Brendan's apartment's like amenities room. And this was like, I don't know how you felt, Quinn, but like this is probably like the best like single just enjoyable day I've had for a while. You know, we met up at like 11 and just like four man cube drafted like what, four times? Or do we sneak in the fourth or we sneak in a fifth?
We did both cubes twice.
Yeah, that was a great time. So Brendan has like, you know, a sweet power cube he's been working on and tinkering stuff around, and that was just a blast to play these matches. And then, you know, Quinn's cube is incredible. The fantastic has been cube that you stole from whose article?
Pascal Maynard.
And like playing these cards where everybody's got to read how shitty they are. Like that was my wheelhouse, man. I was having such a good time.
Yeah, I do have to say, as the Ian Duke of Mike Young Cube only, we were taking a look at the win rate of opposition decks and how there's minimal cost to keeping opposition in your deck when you draft a serviceable green ramp deck. And we'll consider taking action if the win rate continues to be too high.
I think that's good. I like the idea of, you know, it's funny that the two aspects, because I think from talking to Brendan about his cube, he actually wrote some like software to read deck pictures. So, you know, if you take a deck picture after, you send it to him and he tracks like usage statistics, this card's used, that card's not used, whatever. And uses that information in theory to make cuts and adjust, you know, so stuff gets picked more even. I feel like your cube kind of goes the other way. Like if something's getting picked too highly, you got to get it out of there. Opposition, too strong, you know, maybe upheaval, watch list. Like you need to keep an eye on this stuff.
The challenge is that part of the appeal of the cube is that you're like, well, remember when you played this card? It felt so good. And opposition is absolutely one of those cards.
It is. Absolutely. Like, it is
100% fits in that side of things. But yeah, Kevin's deck was just absolutely nuts. And you could take opposition out of his deck and add some other payoff, and his deck would still be quite good, which is the thing.
I think the easy move, like we talked about too, is Glare of Subdual, where you can only tap artifacts and creatures. You know, also was popular at the time. You still get a little bit of the effect. Anyways, we could do a whole like cube tech on your cube, because just reading those cards, man, is everything I want to do. I told you guys when we made those first packs, there's one card in my mind that I'm channeling. And I opened that first pack and there was my boy Tradewind Rider. I just snapped that card and never looked back. I want to play again. Let's do it.
it's right over there if we want to. I'm actually thinking too about making like a classic Legacy cube.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I have an absurd amount of Legacy cards. Like I probably have the cards to do it. I need help like designing it, but to be like, even like, I don't know, the pre Innistrad Legacy cube plus some other cards.
If you need any cards that were in D&T before it was good, I'm your man.
I'll let you know. Anything else before we call it a day?
That's it. That's it for me. McBain, I believe, is back for our regular scheduled program next episode.
Yeah, unless he gets COVID and can't leave.
Worst places to have that happen.
Yes, true. But yeah, otherwise, thanks for listening. We'll be back with McBain to rein in our bullshit in approximately two thresholds. See y'all later.
See ya. I thought post-turtle was going to be something like post-punk, you know?
Yeah.